We are back on the Majority Report, Air America Radio, streaming at airamericaradio.com, blogging at majorityreportradio.com. My name is Sam Cedar. Janine Garofalo out of town. On the phone, Marcus Melitzis, and our next guest in our series, The Fighting Dems, Paul Hackett, an Iraq war vet who has formally announced his candidacy for the U.S. Senate in Ohio yesterday. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Hey, Sam. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Now, we spoke sometime before your special election in Ohio running for Congress. And, you know, so I may ask you some of the same questions again. Forgive me if I do.
No, I remember.
Tell us why you are a Democrat.
Man, is there any other good party to be?
Well, there are some independents I actually like. But
hey, look, the Democratic Party represents the best values in America. We represent fiscal responsibility. We represent limited government. We represent a strong national defense and supporting the troops. And we represent fair trade. Think about that. Fiscal responsibility. When was the last time that we had a balanced budget in the United States? That was under a Democrat. Think about limited government. Which party is it that wants to keep government out of our bedrooms and out of our private lives and out of the decisions that we make with our private doctors? That's the Democratic Party. It's those principles that make me a Democrat and believe so strongly in what we're fighting for.
Marcos.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for...
Hey, Marcos. How are you?
I'm doing great, great. Thanks so much for running. I know how hard it is, and for you to jump from a congressional race to a Senate race is not for the faint of heart, so thanks so much for doing that. And let's talk about Iraq, because obviously that's a big issue, if not one of the biggest issues facing us. I mean, well, tell us what your views are on Iraq, and what do you think we should get done?
I think we should get out of Iraq. If we're not going to fight a war to win a war, then why are we spending billions of dollars and countless lives in Iraq? And after 2.5 years, 2,000 lives, over $200 billion, it's become clear that this administration has no intent to follow the leadership of the military and fight that war to win that war. So, in my opinion, it's time to come home.
And now I know that you, Paul. This is Sam again. I know that you were against the war, and you felt that it was the wrong war to engage in when we last spoke. You've come to the conclusion, and frankly, there have been other people over the past 3 months who I have a lot of respect for who have come to the similar conclusion that you have. From a position that we could actually salvage the situation there. Juan Cole, who is a regular guest in this program, is one of those people. What has changed that has made you see that what is happening over there is not necessarily something that we can be victorious at?
Well, first of all, what are we trying to accomplish over there? I ask you that in a rhetorical sense. I mean, what is the goal? What is the strategy to get to that goal? And again, after 2.5 years, what objective successes have we as a nation had in Iraq? And I would argue to you, none. The security situation is worse today than it was 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago. The infrastructure that we are now allegedly rebuilding in Iraq is worse today than it was 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago when we first got there. So, if we're not going to go over there and try to do whatever it is that this administration is selling us today as to why we're over there, then why are we over there?
Yeah.
And if the argument is that we are there to spread democracy, I again ask all your listeners, is that why we went to another country to topple their dictator to spread democracy? I mean, what standard does that set? You know, and I sometimes hear this argument, well, we got to fight terrorism over there so we don't fight it on our own shores. Well, guess what? That's what we had in Afghanistan, which I think was a righteous fight. But the fact still remains that fighting a war against terrorism is more than killing bad guys / terrorists. It requires a political component, an economic component, and a social component. And this administration didn't plan for that, and it hasn't begun to plan for that yet, and it has woefully mismanaged the military forces over there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Marcos?
Yeah, Paul, you know, you're this is a contested primary. You're up against, probably up against Congressman Sherrod Brown. And there's already some hostility, some bad feelings between supporters of both camps. How are you planning on running this election? Do you plan on trying to make this positive and keep the ammunition on the wine in the Republican Party?
I'll even go one step further. I am not running against Mr. Brown, Congressman Brown, and I am not running against Mike DeWine. I am fighting for all Ohioans and, by extension of being in the U.S. Senate, all Americans. That's my fight. That's what I'm here for. I'm not here for the title. It doesn't interest me. I'm not there for the money. It's a pay cut. I'm there because I want America to be better than how I received it from my parents. I want to pass an America that is better off than what I received, and I want to pass it off to my children and to my grandchildren. So that's my fight, that's my cause, and that's how I plan to fight it. Now, you know, if Congressman Brown or Congressman DeWine take exception to my critique of Washington, D.C., or the status quo, I can't help that. But that's not my mission. My mission is to fight a good fight for Ohioans and Americans.
All right, Paul, now I want to just talk to you because I remember when we had spoken last that one of the biggest impetuses for you to get involved in that congressional race came out of the whole Terri Schiavo fiasco, frankly. And you know, talk to us a little bit about your perspective on these so-called, values issues or social conservative issues, gay marriage, the notion of a woman's right to choose, those type of things.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I believe in the following. When I pull the lever in the election booth, I'm not electing a spiritual leader to go to Washington, D.C. to dictate to me how to live my personal life or how to worship my God. When I need spiritual leadership, I get that when I go to church on Sunday. I don't need some Washington, D.C. career politician telling me how to worship my God or dictate to my wife what decisions she makes with her doctor any more than I need some career politician telling me how many shotguns I get to keep or what type of guns I get to keep in my gun safe. That's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. I elect career politicians or elected officials to go to Washington, D.C. to stand up for working Americans and fight for a good, strong, vibrant economy so that all Americans who want to work can get a good job and provide for their family. That's the deal. I don't need their spiritual leadership.
Marcos.
Yes. So you just announced yesterday. How's the? Are you engaging in the statewide tour yet, or are you doing mostly media right now?
I started off this morning at a UAW rally for jobs in Dayton, Ohio, where they're shutting down the Delphi plant. And I started that at about 9:30 this morning, and then I crossed the state. And right now I'm sitting in a parking lot in the middle of a rainstorm in Marietta, Ohio, in Washington County, Ohio, talking to Democrats.
Very nice. As you go out and talk to people, what are you hearing? What are the concerns that you're hearing most from Ohioans?
Well, look, Ohioans are absolutely disgusted and dismayed with the lack of leadership in both Columbus and in Washington, D.C. And as many of your listeners probably know, in Columbus, this state has just been just let down and hijacked by the corruption and cronyism that has been led by Bob Taft and the Republican Party. I mean, it's just abysmal. And, you know, we've... We've lost in Ohio in the last 5 years. We've lost over 250,000 manufacturing jobs. Currently in Ohio, there are more mortgage foreclosures than in any other state. There are more bankruptcies per capita than in any other state. And also in Ohio, per capita, there are more 25 to 35-year-old Ohioans moving out of the state because of the lack of opportunity. And that all represents the abysmal state of the economy in Ohio. And that's what Ohioans are concerned about. And that, of course, in my view at least, relates to bigger national issues of federal mismanagement, including the horrible budget deficit that we've got, which then ties in my opinion, to the war in Iraq that's being mismanaged. And if anybody out there listening doesn't think that the war in Iraq has been mismanaged by this administration, I urge them to look at what took place post-Katrina and then just realize that that same type of mismanagement from the federal government has been taking place for 2.5 years in Iraq.
Now, Paul, I understand at this point, coming up with plans for an exit strategy out of Iraq is really the responsibility of the president, and it's really no one, and frankly, with the domination of Republicans in our government right now, that Democrats don't necessarily have an opportunity for input. But God willing, come 2006, there'll be a majority of Democrats in the Senate. And in the event that you are the senator from Ohio, give me a notion of what you think would be a viable plan to withdraw from Iraq.
Well, I might take some exception with the premise that the civil administration should be the ones that design the exit strategy from Iraq. I would agree to the extent that obviously it is the President of the United States as Commander-in-Chief who will order the Pentagon to develop the exit strategy. Now, that's a big stretch because this president and his civilian administration haven't done a very good job of listening to the professional military officers at the highest level. I cite, for example, General Shinseki, who was fired, or forced to retire, perhaps I should say, when he told the President of the United States that it will take a minimum of 500,000 troops on the ground to stabilize that country. So here's how it works. Commander-in-Chief tells the Commander of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you develop the exit strategy for my final approval, and here's the date by which you accomplish that and get it done. And those professional military officers come up with the plan, working all the way down through the battalion commanders and through the regimental commanders and the division commanders with the actual logistical plan to exit our forces and material from Iraq. So what the president needs to come to terms with is a date by which to accomplish it, and then allow the military to do what the military does best, and that is plan the strategy.
Is there another component, a diplomatic part? I mean, as far as the potential of leaving some type of vacuum there, or who are the reins?
Absolutely. But here's what's so disappointing about this administration is from the very beginning, before we even went into Iraq, this administration managed to alienate all of our long-term allies, the United Nations, all these other entities and allies that are required in order to make a success of a military operation of the scale of Iraq. And now here we are as a nation, and this administration is back now sort of begging on bended knee to all of our allies that he's managed to basically piss off for their assistance. And, yeah, is there a political component? Yeah, you bet there is. Unfortunately, that aspect of the solution in fighting terrorism has been ignored by this administration. There's also an economic component. There's also a cultural component in fighting the overall war on terrorism. Take a look at how Great Britain managed to defang the IRA. They just didn't do it simply by kicking in doors in Northern Ireland and throughout the Republic. They took a political approach, a social approach, and an economic approach. And that's how you're going to defeat terrorism, because terrorism is about ideas. And you can't simply kill an idea by killing insurgents. not the only part of the equation or solution.
Okay. Marcos, you have one more quick question because we got to go.
Okay. Paul, when you first ran, you were very hard-hitting against the war at a time, I think, that it was a lot more people weren't used to that yet. Would you
right.
agree with that? So are you sensing that people are more receptive to your message, or were they always receptive to your message?
A little bit of both. What I really sensed back in the congressional race is that they were receptive to it, but they were a little bit concerned about vocalizing it, if that makes sense. And what I sense now is they continue to be just as receptive, but are feel emboldened to be more courageous and speak their mind about the war. And I'm not entirely sure how that evolved, but I think it's good because I think it's dangerous.
That it was safe. I think you showed that it was safe to criticize the war.
Pardon me?
I think you were a big part of that.
Pardon me?
I think you were a big part of that change. I think you made it obvious to people that it was safe to criticize the war when conventional wisdom said you couldn't do that in a red district.
All right, well, guys, look, we've run out of time. Paul Hackett, running for Senate in Ohio, thank you so much for joining
Hackett
us.
Hackett for Ohio, baby. HackettForOhio.com. Give me a plug.
Well, HackettForOhio.com. We have the link on the Majority Report site, and I know Marcos has probably put it up on his site.
I did.
And the FightingDems.com site, is that launched yet? Tomorrow. So thank you very much for joining us. Marcos, again, of course, as always, it was a pleasure. And we'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back in the Majority Report.
The Majority Report. Slaying right-wing lies with only one weapon. The truth. And charm. And also humor. The Majority Report on Air America Radio.